How many of you read Ecclesiastes before? All right. What are some common themes? What do we think of when we think Ecclesiastes?
Very depressing.
Very depressing. Vanity of vanities, bro. Yeah, like that kind of thing. Nothing new under the sun. Meaningless. Like if Eeyore had written a book of the Bible, it would be Ecclesiastes, right? It's kind of what we think. And then was it the Beatles? Was it the Beatles? See, who was it? I don't know who sung that song. It's old stuff. Ecclesiastes 3. Every season. Okay, well, I'm sorry. I should have done some more research on that. I don't remember who that is. It was before my time. All right, so looking at Ecclesiastes, we'll be introducing the book tonight. And I would like to put it in a different light. When we read the book of Ecclesiastes, sometimes we go to that kind of depressing mode with Ecclesiastes. It's not really, if you really put the right perspective on it, it's actually quite different. And we'll kind of look at that this evening. So looking at our introduction, I have the clicker right here. I forgot about that. So Ecclesiastes, got to turn the clicker on. Oz is giving me the thumbs up. Okay. All right. So authorship, what does it say? If you look at chapter 1, verse 1, who does it say? What's that? The preacher, right? That's the Hebrew word there for the preacher. Most people say that it's Solomon is what's been traditionally stated. And when we look at authorship, and so we'll be studying, looking at that as well. What other information do we have there that might give us an idea about it being Solomon? Son of David, King of Jerusalem. So that's important, right? He even says he's son of David. Now, was Solomon the only son of David? No, he was not. So were there other sons of David's that were king in Jerusalem? Yes, the answer is yes. That's right. There are other kings that were sons of David. Look at 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 1. The reason I put that Hebrew word up there is because that word is used in connection with Solomon. That the writer of Ecclesiastes kind of uses this title preacher, and that's really the idea of gathering people together to talk to them. And so 1 Kings chapter 8 in verse 1, what happens there? Chapter 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 1, then Solomon assembled the elders of Israel and all the heads of the tribes and the leaders of the fathers, the households of the sons of Israel to King Solomon in Jerusalem to bring up the Ark of the Covenant. And so we have the Ark brought up. And so he does this on several occasions, assembles the people together. And that's what that word is. The same root word is being used here with the word assemble in 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 1. Also, that coupled with the son of David, that coupled with what we see of tradition, it was never really contested, not until Luther, and we're not talking Lex Luther. Martin Luther was the first time people started really kind of debating whether or not it was Solomon. I mean, there were some people in the Jewish traditions that were going back and forth, but they just like to argue. But in general, Solomon is the one that tradition says. They say that Solomon wrote Song of Solomon in his youth. He wrote Proverbs in his middle ages, and then he wrote Ecclesiastes towards the end of his life. Is generally what people would surmise about Ecclesiastes. We don't have anything that concretely says that, but they just, based on the air of information, we kind of go with that as well. We'll also pick up on some other things that we see as we start reading the book of Ecclesiastes together. And I would encourage you to do that if you want some homework. Just go through Ecclesiastes and kind of highlight where we see vanities, where we see the repeated themes, under the sun, and those kind of things. And start seeing some of those things for yourself. But you'll see some other information, and even this morning, tonight, about why we might think it's Solomon as well. So, authorship. Canonicity. It was debated at some points. Some people said, well, it was written in Solomon's own wisdom. So also that it's self-contradictory. There's one point where he says everything's vanity of vanities, and he goes over to talk about something else that's worth doing, and so it seems contradictory. So it can't be canon. And then, of course, more commonly known, alleged pessimism, Epicureanism, skepticism, annihilationism, and a few other isms maybe we've missed. But all those things mean it can't be in the Bible. Well, we're going to explain some of those things tonight. But what is pessimism, skepticism, those kind of things we might know, but what is Epicureanism?
Eat, drink, and be merry.
Yes, that is it. That is a famous line of Epicureanism. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, right? Let's just do these things. And so supposedly that's what's being taught. Some have alleged, and we'll look at those passages as we come to them. That's the reason why it can't be in the Bible. But as we continue to look at it, some other objections. Solomon was inspired, was he not? Where did his wisdom come from? Gone. We also need to understand in the book of Ecclesiastes, he states things that are common wisdom of that time, even common wisdom, you know, shade tree wisdom of our day, and then compares them to a life lived without God and talks about those. So we need to understand where he's coming from to really understand what he's saying. So that's where those contradictions come from. Also, Proverbs chapter 30, verse 6 says, don't add to what's being written. So he's an inspired writer if he wrote Proverbs as well. And then, you know, it was quoted by the early church fathers and early as being canon. So it was used in that way as well. So people who are much closer to it in date considered it to be canon. So by canon, what do we mean? What do we mean when we say canon? It was inspired. It was it's in the table of contents of the Bible, right? So that's what we're talking about. So it deserves to be on the table of contents. It deserves to be where it is. I know this is kind of, I want to give us a good, here's, if you're copying down information, here's a quick outline of our book. And so we'll be looking at the first one this evening, the vanity of all things. And you'll see that word repeated over and over again, the vanity of vanities. The other repeating thing, under the sun, what was seen under the sun is repeated 29 times in a 12-chapter book. So anyway, here are the 10 vanities that are listed. 10 vanities. So if y'all want to know, but we see, and the reason I put human wisdom, human labor, is because they're compared to, if you look at humans' efforts without God, it's vanity, right? Just human wisdom, the labor of my hands, all those things without perspective on God, then it's vanity. It's all vanity. It's another word is empty. It's everything we do is empty without God being the focus on what we do. And so that's why it's best to kind of put those things in perspective for us to see what he's saying these things. He's saying them without God, these things are vain. And if I'm focusing on just these things, just the effort of my labors, just my purpose, just trying to be a rival of somebody else, if that's my only focus, then yes, that's vain. That is vain. All right. Some literary forms, general reflections, and you'll see a lot in this evening, in first-person reflections, exhortations, proverbs. There's a whole section of proverbs in here, which is appropriate being from Solomon, and then allegory. This was actually, chapter 12 is pretty fun. And we'll see some other things as well, as far as talking about just appreciating your youth. And when we get to chapter 12, anyway, it's a fun allegory. But if you do your homework, you'll get to see it already. So it's pretty fun. So purpose. What's the purpose? To refute worldly wisdom's traditional conclusions. If you believe that this is all we have, when you die, you're dead all over, like Rover. If that is your belief system, then yeah, you're going to focus on what he's talking about in Ecclesiastes. What are some of the things he focused on? Do y'all remember in your, if you've thumbed through Ecclesiastes, what are some things he focuses on? Or he gives his life to for a while?
Chasing after riches and
yes. Yes, he tried that. I tried to do this, to see if this would please me, and it was vanity, right? And it was a vain thing, and so if that is all you're doing, then yeah, that's the end. And so he really refutes worldly wisdom, and it's really a great book. Even it's always, let me back up, Would you believe that man is currently more greedy and more focused on that, or is it just more blatant or more publicized? What do you think? Have the hearts of men changed that much that I'm not setting you up for anything. This is an honest question. I'm not going to say the answer is no. Brr. No, I'm not setting you up. But what is your opinion on the hearts of men? Yes, sir. Okay. That's right. We're getting there. You're getting there. So if y'all want to teach class, that'd be great. So but that's exactly right. That is exactly right. There is nothing new under the sun. And when we look at what's going on, the hearts of men haven't changed that much. We'll get to that when we get to that verse. Anyway, I'll ask that question later. To show the futility of life outside of God or under the sun, and that's kind of what really, if we read this book with this as a focus, that if we live life without God, then yes, vanity of vanities. It's all vain. But if you put life in perspective, living a life to please God, and isn't that what he says at the end? Fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole conclusion of the matter. I've done everything. I did it for you. I did the homework. I did the research. And God's right, right? Is essentially the conclusion of the matter.
I tested it.
Yep. Somebody had to do it, and I took it upon myself, right? So, but here's what he gives us at the end. Fear God. And so he says, keep these things in perspective while we're going through the book. And then to demonstrate the faith as the key of life in relationship with God. So let's get into a perspective. Chapter 7, verse 29. Behold, I found only this, that God made men upright, but they have sought out many devices. And when we say many devices, he's not talking about cell phones, right? What is he talking about?
Pleasures,
right? Just we've sought out. God has made us upright and straight and made us to walk after him. But what happened? We are the ones that have sought after other things, right? We're the ones that have gone after other things. And so this really is kind of the focus point. God made us to live and walk after him, but we're the ones that have gone and looked after other things. And so he says, here's what it is when you do look after other things. And so it's from this perspective, looking at Ecclesiastes, we really start to see things start to come into focus. That kind of murky, Eeyore-esque sort of vision that we see in Ecclesiastes kind of melts away, and you start to see it for what it is. He's comparing traditional wisdom, earthly wisdom, with godly wisdom, and seeing it from that perspective. So the vanity of all things. Let's dive into the book, chapter 1, verse 1. We've kind of looked at this already as far as who's writing this. And he says in verses 2 and 3, this assertion, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vain, all is vanity. What advantage does a man have on all his work? What he does under the sun, which he does under the sun, or what profit you might have is another word that's there. And that's actually a good translation, because that word advantage or profit there is the idea that what do I have left over? When I've done everything, when I've balanced the books, what do I have left over? Is that idea, is that what that word is? And he said it's vain. You don't have any. It's empty. You don't have anything left over is what he's trying to say. If that is my focus, if that's my only focus. And then he begins to give us some examples, some illustrations of life. Verse 4, what example do we have? What are we talking about generation?
Lifespan,
right? So we have several generations in here in this room right now. Has much changed from generation to generation? Do men continue to march on like they've always done, right? In general, right? That's true. But the earth remains forever. Verse 5, what example do we have? That's a song. We're not going to go fiddler on the roof on this, but also the sun rises and the sun sets and the hasting in its place and the rises. What does anything change? Does the sun continues to go up and comes down, comes up and comes down, continues? What's the next cycle? Verse 6. The wind. We're familiar with wind, aren't we? Yes, we are familiar with wind. But it continues to go on its cycle. Verse 7, the rivers flow into the sea, the sea's not full. Verse 8, all things are wearisome, man is not able to tell it. The eye, what is he saying about the eye, verse 8, or in the ear? And do they ever stop seeing? No, they never stop hearing. And they're never full, right? Yes, sir. Yes. Yes, and these statements need to be kept in the perspective, right? As you're saying, these are things that seemingly these things go on for us who live so finite a lives. It seems like forever, right? And we don't know how long it's going to be. But they continue on their course. They continue on their way. Things are as they have always been. And that's what he says kind of in verse 9, starting in verse 9, talking about application. That which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done. So there's nothing new under the sun, right? Now, is that a true statement? There's nothing new under the sun. Yes. But internet, Al Gore gave us the internet. Is that not new? What is the internet? It's communication, right? It's just a different form of communication, but it's communication. So we break things down to the principle of matters. There is really nothing new under the sun. It's just a fancier way of doing the same thing, right? And so there is really nothing new under the sun in principle. Yes, sir? Were you all able to hear that? So that, I mean, everything's wearisome, and that's kind of what we get into when we start talking about advertising, right? Well, if you have this, it won't be so wearisome, right? If you have this. And what have we really done to ourselves with technology? Have we made our lives easier with technology? We'll start this. That's actually kind of, we're foreshadowing to next Wednesday. But we have not made our lives easier with technology. But there's medicine, yes. Other than medicine and clean roads, what has technology ever done for us, right? But if we look at technology, yes, there are some things, but have we made life easier? No, we have not. We have filled our lives up. We made a tractor to plow the field, so it doesn't take me a week to plow my fields now. All right, now what am I going to do with that time that I have? Am I going to just sit around and do nothing? No, I'm going to fill it up with something else. And that continues to, and has always been something that continues to fill itself up. And we'll see later on that is vanity of vanities, right? We're filling it all up. So hold on to that, and we'll talk about that in chapter 2, verse 24 next week. But here is what he's talking about. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see, this is new, this is a new thing, already has existed before? Verse 11, will we always be remembered? And this is a repeating theme throughout the book. Did you know there are studies that are being done how are we going to hide nuclear waste? How long, what's the shelf life for nuclear waste? It's up there with a Twinkie, right? What's the shelf life of nuclear waste? Like thousands of years, right? It is bad news bears for a long time. Some of you are scientists and know that and can speak more eloquently on it, but it's a long time. So long that they're studying about, all right, what language, what symbols, what things are we going to do to put on the door that says, do not open. This is not Tutankhamun's tomb, right? Don't open this. It's a bad thing. Because there are nations that they're finding that we had no knowledge of before. The Bible told us about them. Remember the Hittites? In the 1940s, there was a book written about how the Bible is incorrect because no nation of the Hittites ever existed. Do you know what we have now? We have a Hittite dictionary, and we found the capital a few short years after that book was published. So there are whole nations that are still just out in the desert somewhere that are still buried that are gone. Nobody knows about. And that's what he's saying. So time continues. The people of old will be forgotten. Will be forgotten, and even the people of the future will be forgotten. And he's painting, and this is why people say, if you think that this is just life to live here, that is a nihilism, right? We're just going to be forgotten, and nothing's going to be remembered, so what am I going to do? I might as well just sit here, you know? I might as well eat worms, right? Is what they used to say when they were kids. So why do I need to keep doing anything? So, but that's the perspective if that's your only focus. If your focus is without God, That's a perspective. But then he goes on to talk about the futility of wisdom. If I put everything into wisdom, and so we start this process of exercising and looking at different things that he's done for us. He says, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my mind to seek and explore wisdom. And this is yet another reason why Solomon fits this picture best, right? As far as the author of this book. There's no king in Jerusalem that denotes wisdom more than Solomon, right? And also as far as the labors and things we'll talk about in a moment. So what does he say he does with wisdom? It's open book test. What does he do with wisdom? He's searching it out. He's seeking wisdom. He gave my heart all over to wisdom. But he says it's a grievous task, right? Verse 18. It's God has given sons of men to be afflicted. I said, I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. Can you catch wind? Can you strive after wind? I mean, you can try, right? Don't get me started on windmills. Okay. Do what?
Catch it in a sail.
In a sail, right? It is not a reliable energy source. Just putting it out there. Prove me wrong. So we'll talk about it afterwards. But so chasing after wind is not something that's fruitful. And he says that's the same thing. He said, verse 15, what's crooked cannot be straightened, and what's lacking cannot be counted. If it's not there, you can't count it, right? And which really threw me off when we were doing negative integers when I was a kid. But it's not there. And so anyway, we look at these, you can't change. How many of you tried to straighten a screwdriver after you bent it using it as a pry bar, which you shouldn't have done? It's just me. Okay. So anyway, you can't straighten something that's been bent. It's never straight again. Your glasses, how many of you sat on your glasses and you tried to straighten them again? Okay. Those of you with contacts, you don't have that misery. So you can't, once it's been done, it can't be undone. Verse 16, he said, I said to myself, he intensifies his quest. Behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before him. And my mind is observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I realize that this is also striving. What is he saying? Is there enough in wisdom to satisfy what I need? In wisdom alone, in just the knowledge of things. No, there's not. It's striving after wind. And that's, he says in verse, because in much wisdom there is much grief. Why would that be the case? If I know a lot, why would there be an increase of knowledge results in increasing pain? You're aware? Yeah? Yes? So you know your limitations, you know what you want to achieve, and they're at juxtaposed from one another. There's also this idea that now that I know this thing, then now I have to adhere myself to it, which is the knowledge of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. People were innocent until they had that knowledge, right? As soon as we ate, and God said, "Who told you were naked? You didn't even know you were naked." Right? And so that then, because there was that knowledge it was given, you had to be able to, yes, real quick. That's true. Yep. There are some lessons that are learned the hard way, and sometimes you wish, I'd really need to learn that lesson, right? Maybe it's a lesson, it's a silver lining, but you didn't want to go through the event. Did y'all hear that? Is it painful to watch somebody else do something, to go through things that if they had made a better decision, life would be different? How many of your parents? Okay, so does that happens, right? That happens. Well, you don't have to be a parent. You can be a friend. You can be, everybody who knows somebody has made poor decisions. So these are things that cause pain. And so he talks about these things. Increasing in knowledge, increasing in wisdom also increases the grief that goes with it. And so futility in this as well. So we continue on with this study. Talks about the vanity of pleasure, and this is obviously something he was going to get to. It was noble of him to start with wisdom, right? It was noble of him to start with wisdom, but he goes into talking about the vanity of pleasure. He said, I said to myself, or I said to my heart, I will now test pleasure. So enjoy yourself, and behold, it too was futility. So here's this idea, I'm going to go do this. What did he seek after? What is he trying to do? In this section, and we have several things kind of mentioned here, kind of outlined. He kind of just throws himself into this thing on a whim, and the first thing that we kind of look at here in verse 3 is what?
Mind-altering.
Yeah, looks like, I'm going to seek after wine. Maybe if I know all the nuances of wine and you know all these kind of things. And but what's interesting is how he says this. How does he build a hedge around his exploration into wine in verse 3? What does he do to build a hedge around that? Yeah, the verse 3... Yeah. Yeah, and he kind of builds in this kind of like stop emergency, pull the ripcord kind of thing, saying, while my mind was guiding me wisely, right? So he went into wine, but with some reservation, right? I'm not going to go completely headlong into this because what's the end? Can you ever reach the bottle or reach the bottom of a bottle if you've gone headlong into it? No, right? You can't. There is an addictive process. And so it seems from the text that he kind of builds in this hedge so he doesn't go completely get lost in that endeavor, right? But it was folly. And then he starts to build things, right? How many of us have tried to lose ourselves in work and just work? If I work and provide, then that's a good thing, right? Is it good to work and provide for our families? Is that the only good we can do for our families? Right? No, obviously there needs to be a balance in these things. And what did he begin to do? Verse 4, several verbs here that he used. What did he begin to do? Yes, he built, planted, enlarged, made things, gardens. 2 Kings chapter 25, verse 4 talks about a garden. And so all these projects that we're seeing here, again, kind of all point back to Solomon. To Solomon as far as the source of these things. He was the one, the big architect, the big builder. Solomon was the kind of golden age for Jerusalem and Israel. And so he did those things. What does he say? How does he measure wealth in verses 7 and 8? Possessions, right? With slaves. Slaves was a very big show of wealth. Gold and silver. Yes, flocks, herds, agriculture. So in every area that he could, he tried these things. Verse 8, section B, or like a subsection of verse 8, what did he try? People into, you know, as far as concubines and those kind of things, again, pointing itself to Solomon. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 3 talks about the excess of concubines that he had. So he's trying all these different things. And what is his conclusion, verses 9 through 11? Did he withhold anything from himself? No, he didn't. He followed after everything, chased after everything. And in the end, what does he say? It was totally worth it. It was awesome. It was what? All vanities. Can we learn something from this? Do we trust Solomon in what he's saying? Do any of us have pocketbooks like Solomon? That's, well, you know, I gotta verify. I need to verify this study, right? We're going to have a committee, and we're going to verify that this study. We want the unredacted version of this study. So, do we need to verify the? No, we can take Solomon at his word, right, and understand that this is truth. That there is no value in just seeking after these things. We'll look at this. We'll have to look at it next week. But is it wrong to have possessions? Is it a sin to have these things? When does it become a sin? Yes, when it gets in the way of our priority in having a relationship with God. Right. 1 Timothy chapter 6 verse 10 talks specifically about the love of money is the root of all evil. And if we're following after those things, then that's where we're going to derail ourselves. But Solomon does a great job of kind of picking apart, pulling apart what everybody today is saying, right? I need to build up and amass wealth. I need to do these things in order to be happy. And Solomon is saying no. If you want a heads up, look at chapter 2, verse 24. There's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. Live the simple life. Do the work you need to do. And know that your labor is good. And don't worry about all these other things that you have to have, air quotes, right? The things that you need to have, the world is telling you have to have. Solomon's saying it's not worth it. So if we look at this last slack section for today. So the vanity of wisdom, it talks about wisdom being superior than folly, wisdom's fate. What fate does wisdom and folly or foolishness share, according to this chapter 2? Verse 14, the wise man's eyes are his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I know that one fate befalls them both. All men go the way of the earth, right? We're all going to die, right? We will all die. If you want to write out there, Psalm chapter 49, verse 10, talks about the fool and the wise both die. They both share the same, Psalm 49, both verse 10, they both share the same end. And so he begins to say, if I focus so much on just wisdom and those things, but in the end I'm going to die anyway, what purpose is it? So much so, verse 17, so I hated life. He was sorely vexed about hating life because he had done these things, and at the end of these things is futility and striving after the wind. But that, again, please keep all these things in perspective. If that is all I'm focusing on, and I'm not putting God into the equation, because I can seek after wisdom and use my wisdom to glorify God, right? If I'm doing those things to help and to work for God, that's something completely different. But if I'm just doing it for the sake of having wisdom and being content with wisdom, am I ever going to be filled up? And in the end, will I have anything to show for it? No, we will all die and go the way of the earth. But if I've built up a life in God, what do I have at the end of that life? I have God, right? I have that relationship with Him. And so that's really what Solomon is taking everything out of the way and showing us, if you want to play that game, the end is vanity. The end of all these things is vanity. And so we'll be seeing that kind of over and over again throughout this book. Any thoughts or comments before we close? Questions? Shout-outs? Yes, sir? Yes. That's what needs to be seen throughout this book as we read Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Proverbs 2, is that we are seeing the surface stuff, and we're seeing that's the worldly wisdom, but behind all that is what God says there's a different way of living, and we'll get to that towards the end of the book. Thank you very much for your time this evening. I appreciate it.